This is the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, bringing you an action-packed hour of women who made the headlines this past week, as well as other big stories of women blazing trails. Today's episode is a full hour of news. We did not have enough time to put in a featured interview, so we will come back after the Thanksgiving holiday and feature one of our women trailblazers or women who are also making the news. But we're going to jump right into it because there's so much news to cover in the kick heard around the world. Last weekend, UFC mega hit wonder Ronda Rousey, the most notable and highest paid UFC fighter, was defeated by underdog Holly Holmes. This shocked fans and sports bookies around the world. I can tell you from a personal perspective, all I heard was about the Ronda Rousey fight amongst my family members as well, and I really got into it. Didn't watch the fight or pay for it, but definitely was anticipating it last Saturday, and it was an unbelievable shock. Well, before we go on to the fight, and before I assume you all know who Ronda Rousey is, because frankly I did not know a lot about her, let's level the playing field. Ronda Rousey is undoubtedly the most famous name right now in UFC. Last Saturday, she was facing Holly Holm to defend her title as UFC bantamweight champion. Now, Ronda is a 28-year-old powerhouse with California good looks and has been on a whirlwind this past year, as she has raced to the top of the UFC world, being named in May this year as the most dominant active athlete in the world by two publications. An ESPN poll also ranked her the best female athlete ever. In fact, I was a little bummed about that because I personally believe that Serena Williams is the best athlete ever, but that's another short story. Well, in September, just a few months ago, it was revealed that she was also the most highest paid UFC athlete. Now, this is fairly stark given the fact that UFC started first with men and has now branched off to include women a few years later. And now you've got Ronda Rousey, who's actually making more than the male fighters. So in terms of pay equality and purse size, this definitely is a great thing for women athletes. Well, Ronda's path to superstardom and now movie star was no accident. So I want to give you a little bit of background on her because I think it's a great story. In fact, being a trailblazer was something Ronda has been used to at an early age. So what do we know about her? Her wiki says that she was born in Riverside, California. She's the youngest of three daughters. Her parents are Anne-Marie DeMars and Ron Rousey. Her mother was had a decorated judo career, and she was the first U.S. citizen to win a world judo championship. So it's in the blood. Although Ronda did suffer from some setbacks personally, her biological father, when taking her and her sister on a sledding engagement, he actually broke his back and then became a paraplegic. He committed suicide in 1995 when Ronda was only 8 years old. Well, her mother remarried. In the first 6 years of her life, Ronda also struggled with speech and could not form an intelligible sentence. She had a condition called apraxia, a neurological childhood speech and sound disorder. Her parents actually moved her out to North Dakota to obtain intensive speech therapy to correct this at a well-known Minot State University with specialists. Ronda didn't even finish high school. She later earned a GED. But she stayed very consistent in the world of judo. She began judo with her mother at the age of 11. At 17, Rousey actually qualified for the 2004 Olympic Games in Athens. She was the youngest judo in the entire Games. In 2004, she did, at that same Olympics, she won a gold medal at the World Junior Judo Champions in Budapest, Hungary. 2 years later, at the ripe old age of 13, she became the first female U.S. judoka in nearly 10 years to win an A-level tournament. She went 5-0 to claim gold at the Birmingham World Cup in Great Britain. Later that year, the 19-year-old, won the bronze medal at the Junior World Championships, becoming the first U.S. athlete ever to win two Junior World medals. Rousey also became the first American to win an Olympic medal in women's judo since its inception as an Olympic sport in 1992. So she's an Olympian before she even became into the world of UFC. In fact, the young Olympian was the first female UFC fighter to sign up when UFC opened up to women in 2012. So there's a lot of legacy, a lot of in terms of her rise to fame from an Olympian perspective from the judo side, then coming into the UFC, she was really a trailblazer. Well, in the bantamweight category, she's been a champion for the last 3 years, well, until now. So last Saturday, in a very muchly anticipated fight, Ronda was set to fight 34-year-old Holly Holm for the first time in defending her bantamweight title. Now, this was a fight that was anticipated to be very, of course, well-watched because Ronda is a great marketing machine. And Holm, which was against Rousey, while the match was a perfect match in the sense that they both were undefeated, there was very little thought that Holm would win. In fact, in the sports bookies had bettors had in $100 could get $600 if they learning drastically that the odds were obviously in favor of Rousey. Well, a little bit more about Rousey before we talk about the match. One thing that she's been credited, in fairness, has been also bringing new fans to the sport who now there's a lot of focus and fear on whether or not these Ronda Rousey fans, and trust me, I have so many of them in my family, if they're going to go away because she brought a lot of attention to it. And as you might have heard, losing this was a big defeat for her. So she was kicked out, literally knocked out in the second round, and it wasn't even a fight by the second round. She got the crap kicked out of her to the point where she couldn't even stand up. Holly Holm, a former boxing champion who moved into mixed martial arts in 2011, forced Rousey to take more punches than she's used to, blooding her with a hit after she brought the champion down with the kick that was heard around the world in the second round. Well, whether delighted or disappointed, and I'm reading from one of the articles here, most fans were shocked. Rousey, which was 12-1 favorite in Vegas before the fight, she, again, rocketed to stardom, not only as a female athlete, but outside of the ring. She was in a ton of blockbuster movies, on a ton of magazine covers. In fact, I think 2 weeks ago when we were watching NFL news, she was out there with the NFL desk and, you know, throwing footballs at them. I mean, everybody was all talking about Ronda Rousey. I think she was on also every single one of the late night talk shows. And she's not known for being humble. In fairness, she had posted to Instagram before the fight, I'm looking for, quote, you're going to get your, she said this to Holly Holm, her opponent, you're going to get your ass kicked tomorrow, and I'm really going to enjoy the beating I give you. Well, after the fight, Rousey was brought to the hospital, which is standard protocol, and UFC President Dana White said the fighter was devastated and depressed. And so barely a week later, Ronda Rousey has not really talked to the public. She's only posted a note to Instagram saying, I'm going to take a little bit of time, but I'll be back. And she's also indicated that she's ready to fight Holly Holm. Well, in regards to the sport itself, a lot of, again, whether or not UFC is going to suffer from this, I think there's just been a lot of articles written just so that they can get, you know, viewership. I don't think that that's going to happen. There's been so much focus on these two women. And who's this other woman? Well, Holly Holm, and we wanted to bring a little bit to you. She's an amazing woman. And one of the things that I'd like to highlight about her is, you know, there's two different fighters. What Ronda's done for the industry and bringing focus to it is she's brought more people to actually watch the game. Her toughness, again, she's beautiful. She's got muscles. I mean, men are fawning all over her, you know, which shouldn't be used as a reason for them to watch her. But at least she brought focus to the fact that women can also fight in the sport as well. Holly is came from a completely different cloth. Let's talk about her. She's 34 years old. A little bit about her from her wiki page. She is a former professional boxer and kickboxer. So she wasn't in the art of, you know, the world of judo. She wasn't a junior champion. She's not an Olympian. She also didn't have as many wins historically compared to Ronda, but she still had this, you know, she was undefeated up until from this past year. So she was obviously the natural person that was going to fight Ronda. What makes her also interesting is people have also called her the preacher's daughter. Holly was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She grew up in Bosque Farms, the youngest of three children. Her father, Roger, is a Church of Christ preacher, obviously giving her the name the preacher's daughter. Her mother, Tammy, is a massage therapist. She had an amateur boxing career, and when she joined the UFC title, there was definitely a lot of focus on her being one of the heavyweights, but not necessarily in that weight category, given her her wonderful capability of knocking people out from her style and her capacity. So despite being a massive underdog. She controlled majority of this fight last Saturday with her superior striking, and she defended all of Rousey's takedowns. So she was ultimately prepared. One of the criticisms that came out there was that maybe Ronda was a little bit too focused on her acting career. I think that's just criticism. Listen, at some point somebody gets knocked down. But what's even more impressive about the story? Number one, the fact that nobody was expecting Ronda Rousey to win. In fact, it was so catastrophic for Vegas that Vegas sports bookies got crushed. In fact, Jay Cornegy, vice president of the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook, told the many publications that all of the books got crushed. In fact, here's the most interesting thing about it. The total amount of money wagered on Saturday night's fight was more than the average NFL game, and this was, which is a much more highly anticipated sport. It even surpassed wagers by any other fight that Ronda had done at that time. At Westgate, the sportsbook, bets on home outnumbered those on her opponent by a 5-to-1 margin. Cornegy predicts that the rematch will be huge. Many odds makers, in fact, say that despite the unfortunate loss, Rousey is still the favorite to win in a rematch against Holmes. So there's still already people, you know, definitely getting up and excited about another rematch. Well, again, what makes this story even more interesting, and I'm a fan of Holly after, you know, the preacher's daughter, you would have thought that after a defeat like that, that she would be just as boisterous. She would be touting her chest, saying, "Yeah, I took her down." And let's remember, Ronda was not humility is not in Ronda's DNA. That's just, and it may be because that's what she needed to really put herself on the map. Holly has been in the past few days defending Ronda at every chance she gets. In fact, the Huffington Post, their headline said, "Holly Holm defends Ronda Rousey's courage after 5 days in a knockout." Quote, 5 days after executing a kick to the head that floored heavy favorite Ronda Rousey, newly crowned bantamweight champion Holly Holm spoke out on behalf of her opponent, discussing the courage it took for Rousey even to step in to the octagon, which is what they call it for UFC fighters, last Saturday night. This is what Holly Holm told Dan Patrick. "This is a hard job to be in, and a lot of people can't get in there. When you're in that octagon, it's one of the lonely places in the world because it's only up to you to do it. A lot of people wouldn't even have the nerve to be able to get in and just put it all on the line." Well, both Holm and Rousey are now back in Los Angeles. Holm said that they haven't talked or spoken, which obviously is understandable. But the dialogue surrounding Rousey's literal and symbolic fall was further fueled on Tuesday when Rousey refused to even show her face to cameras and paparazzi at LAX. And this is also coming from home. She's been pretty vocal in her career, so I think it's easier for people to want to pick at things for her, which was what Holmes said in defending her. She can handle it, but I hope people don't get too focused on that. Isn't that amazing? She's so compassionate and defending Rousey. She even said that, listen, at the end of the day, Ronda brought a lot of focus to the sport, and for that, I'm very thankful for her. So to me, that in every sense of the world, that is a class act. Congratulations to Holly Holm, not only for your defeat, but your defeat just from a character perspective. You're handling it with grace. Ronda, you're still a winner in everybody else's eyes. Everyone's going to look forward to seeing what you're going to do when you get back. But more importantly, Ronda's on a six-month, I wouldn't say sabbatical, but she's on a six-month healing, which is, I think, typical for UFC fighters, especially given how bad the beating was when she lost. So we're going to come back. We're going to have more women in the news, more when we return.
Are you an entrepreneur, coach, or consultant who is tired of constantly searching for the next client? Are you ready to get your expertise out of your head, into the world, and packaged into a profitable online course that delivers a steady stream of your perfect ideal clients to your door and a steady, predictable source of revenue? Hi, this is Janine Blackwell, creator of Create Six-Figure Courses Virtual Bootcamp. And I've created my own seven-figure courses, and I've walked hundreds of experts like you through the step-by-step of creating and launching a profitable online course. I'd like to invite you to a free online training I'm hosting for you called The 7 Steps to Creating and Launching Your Profitable Online Course. I'm going to show you exactly how to create your course, market your course, and automate delivery of it so you can get your course up and running fast and have it work for you 24/7. You can grab your spot for this free training at www.createmyonlinecourse.com. So join me at www.createmyonlinecourse.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Interpares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Interpares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como. We are sponsored by Interpares Capital. When you need financing for your commercial real estate, whether private equity, mezzanine, or bridge financing, they have access to funds from $2 million to $250 million. Call their advisors today. Well, when we left off, we were talking about women powerhouses Ronda Rousey as well as Holly Holm. Well, on November 19th was Women's Entrepreneurship Day. In honor of that day, many publications honored it by highlighting many women entrepreneurs and their stories. But how did this women's entrepreneurship come to being? And in fact, it's very new. Well, it is a day on which the work of women entrepreneurs is observed and discussed, which is now held on the 19th of November of each year. This is only its second year. The inaugural event was held in New York City last year at the United Nations, with additional events being held simultaneously in several other countries. 144 nations now recognize the Women's Entrepreneurial Day, which included the presentation of the Women's Entrepreneurship Day Pioneer Awards ceremony. Could you say that? The organization behind WED, Women's Entrepreneurship Day, also has an ambassadorship and fellowship program. Well, it was founded and implemented by Wendy Diamond. She volunteered with the Adelante Foundation, which provides microcredit to low-income women while in Honduras. Upon her return to the U.S., Wendy said, you know, it's time I developed something to help similar philanthropic causes. The first day held last year was observed again by 144 countries. Fortune magazine actually did a focus on it and called it, quote, a global movement to celebrate and support female founders, and it shed some light on some of their challenges. Forbes magazine also wrote that the intention was also to mobilize a global network of female business owners, entrepreneurs, and change makers who support and empower the community of women entrepreneurs and their businesses. The event has also been proclaimed by an official day by both Governor Andrew Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. Well, we decided to get polled together because there's so many articles written by many different news publications on which entrepreneurs to focus on. There's a handful that we've already posted and we wanted to talk a little bit about it. Well, have you heard of the company Zola? Editor Therese Novolina wrote an article about Zola in the New York Business Journal, and this is a fantastic startup that is also sure to upset a very tightly controlled industry. And what is that? It's the wedding registry business. When I think of wedding registry, having spent so much money on my business, that's definitely an area to break through. Well, Zola made the news because it announced $10 million Series B funding today, round that it will use to grow its millennial-centric digital wedding registry business. And it whisks shoppers away from the large retail incumbents like the Macy's and the Nordstrom's and the Williams-Sonoma. The Manhattan-based company's registry platform lets couples build personalized pages, and it offers tech features such as group gifting, controlled shipping, and virtual exchanging of gifts. Now, think about that. The only thing you could do with gift registry right now is basically click on it, say you want this, but then you have to tell people, oh, go to Macy's, I'm registered here, and I'm registered here. This aggregates. So if you want to go to your registry at five different stores, Zola pulls all of that together for you. Isn't that phenomenal? So you didn't come up with that earlier. Mind-blowing. But the real kicker of it is that the universal registry of gifts from many retailers and 250-plus brands as well as harder to find boutique items. So they've even included boutique firms, retail shops. The company is run by a chief executive officer who unabashedly has the old-fashioned brick-and-mortar retailers that have dominated the $19 billion industry in her sights. And this is from the co-founder and CEO. Quote, our goal is to displace the traditional department store registry and be the registry of choice for millennials. This is coming from CEO and co-founder Shanlin Ma. She's also an Upstart 100 honoree, and she said this in a phone interview by Teresa. Quote, the thing that we've really seen is millennials are moving away from the big traditional department stores, for their registries because they're moving online and to mobile when they shop. Leading the e-commerce companies are upstarts like Ma and the company's chief technology officer, Nobu Nakaguchi. Both of them are former employees of the Guild Group, also another success story from the entrepreneurial perspective. That company launched 2 years ago with one of the New York tech scene's most bold-faced names, Kevin Ryan, who's actually chairman co-founder of Guild Group, MongoDB, and Business Insider. Over 100,000 couples have signed up to use Zola already as their wedding registry, and more will surely come this winter season, a popular time for engagements, especially next spring. Revenues have already grown $8 million from the first year to an anticipated $40 million this year. Isn't that impressive? The company hit profitability September 2015, just shy of its two-year anniversary. Can you imagine that? Doing a startup and hitting the black in 2 years on your two-year anniversary and hitting $40 million revenues in year two. That's impressive. Well, the cookware category alone has grown 10 to 15 times year over year, with 2015 being the first time that Zola's team of 35, yeah, there you go, that's all they have, but their staff, they really did focus on talent. They hail from companies such as Google, J.Crew, and Williams-Sonoma. And the Series B investment comes from both coasts. Menlo Park-based venture capitalist Canvas Ventures led the round with participation from San Francisco-based 4Runner Ventures, as well as New York City firms Thrive Capital and BBG Ventures, as well as the Female Founders Fund. Quote, and this is quoting from Ma, what we saw was huge growth in the wedding registry business. The tide of millennial couples moving toward the idea of a universal registry just continues to happen in a really big way. Although, unfortunately, with that growth, we really focused on a business, making sure we could support the scale and growth without overly scaling on a team or spend. We've been trying to manage the growth in a sustainable way. End of quote. Well, the Zola founder is with a nod to the idea that most couples live together before marriage and probably already have a blender, allow couples to include not just goods, but experiences and expenses or cash for specific purposes. So on Zola, you, for instance, could put in a request for a down payment on a home and contributing to that something like a GoFund. The concept has proved very popular with high household income couples especially. Zola has also found that their early customers are now using the site for other purposes. In fact, couples that got married are now using Zola as their wedding registry, so they're trying to jerry-rig it, are now trying to use it for expecting parents, and so their baby registries, and they're also trying to do other things like birthday and holidays. This is not something that Zola was originally focused on, but it's definitely something that they're growing. So definitely check these guys out. Zola, www.zola.com. They've, again, just received $10 million in Series B funding, which means you're going to see growth there. Next, Fortune featured five women entrepreneurs that they feel are up-and-comers to watch for the next year. And we have their list here. Fortune came out with it yesterday, calling the most powerful women on Women's Entrepreneurship Day. So I'm just going to give you five names of women, and if you know them, that's great, but definitely go check their startups up as well. Ubeam, the founder is Meredith Perry. Ubeam, www.ubeam.com, is a wireless power startup that transmits power over the air to charge electronic devices. Pretty nifty. At only 25, Perry is already being called the next Elon Musk. That's pretty impressive. She created the first prototype wireless charger while she was an undergraduate at the University of Pennsylvania. I think we can say she's a smart cookie. She's already raised $23 million, according to Crunchbase, and her notable investors include venture capitalist Mark Andreessen and Mark Cuban, as well as CEO Marissa Mayer. We also have on the list LightSail Energy. The founder there is Danielle Fogg. LightSail is aims to compress air to create heat and use that heat to create power. Fong calls herself, quote, the girl from the future, end of quote, and that she has yet to bring a product to market. She's already managed to raise serious funds. She's raised $42 million already. Her notable investors are Bill Gates and PayPal co-founder Peter Thiel. Next on the list is Drawbridge. The founder, and I'm hopefully I do her name right, is Kamakshi Sivaramakrishnan. That's a long one. Her claim to fame is she founded Drawbridge to enable brands to have seamless conversations with customers. I've checked this out. It's actually pretty cool. Unlike other mobile advertising companies, Drawbridge identifies multiple mobile devices that are used by the same person, improving ad targeting and attribution. So I definitely see other firms using this product. She's raised only $20 million today. It's still a great feat. Her notable investors are Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Sequoia Capital. Those are big names. Next on the list is Tracy Young, co-founder of PlanGrid. Along with her other co-founder and fellow construction engineer Ryan Sutton G., Young set out to create a company to digitize blueprints. That's right, blueprints. The company, PlanGrid, lets architects, construction workers, and their bosses access building plans from a mobile device and edit them like a group document. It's great. You know, they needed that as well. She's raised $59 million date, and her notable investors are Sequoia Capital, Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian, Y Combinator, and Google Ventures. Last on the list from Fortune is co-founder Oshma Garg. She founded Gobble. It's a subscription-based food service. It's similar to competitors like Blue Apron and Plated in that it provides a selection of meals each week and delivers recipes and pre-portioned ingredients to subscribers' homes. Now, I've used Blue Apron before, so I need to try to see what this Gobble is about. The company's key differentiator, which is why I'm going to try it, there's very little actual cooking involved. That's what a mother of five needs. They've only raised $11 million to date. Their notable investors are Reid Hoffman, founder of LinkedIn, Keith Rabios, former COO of Square, and again, Alexis Ohanian, co-founder of Reddit. Congratulations to these five ladies being called out on Fortune's Most Powerful Women or Powerful Women Entrepreneurs to watch this year. Next we have is Bizwoman from the American Business Journal did a different type of list, highlighting eight female founders that left corporate America as executives to entrepreneurs. This you could go to www.bizwoman.com. And it was, I don't think we have enough time to cover everybody on the list. So what we have on here is Jen Mojo. She's the founder of Paper Dolls. She talks, as well as the other eight women, what was it that did it for them, that pushed them from corporate America to becoming entrepreneurs. For Jen Mojo and her company, it was chasing a job title was losing its luster. My sons were getting older and I didn't want to be away from home as much. Becoming an entrepreneur has helped me support other female founders and what ultimately created the purpose and inspiration for my company to make the leap to create Paper Dolls and design my own work life. So Jen Mojo, founder of Paper Dolls. The other one on this list is Julie Lee. She's founder and CEO of EdTwist. Well, EdTwist, coming off the high star-studded launch work of Vivo UK, which is Julie Lee was actually part of that. She said, quote, I found myself dumbfounded standing at the luxurious lobby of the Ritz-Carlton Millenia Singapore when a tiny voice over the phone asked in a very innocent way, quote, Mommy, why are you working? I couldn't even answer this. I can answer complex questions about strategy and monetization and distribution, but I had no good answer to this very simple question for a four-year-old who had never used Vivo. That was the moment I decided to change my energy and channel it and channel my skills to create a service that my son can use and will grow with him. So that was her inspiration. Maxine Bedat, she's the founder and CEO of sustainable energy company Zade. Zade emphasizes a clean supply chain. It's revolutionizing fashion. What was her inspiration? Quote, I spent the earlier part of my career in various fields trying to see how to make an impact on global development. While I worked at the UN in the nonprofit world and even became a lawyer trying to figure it out, I didn't have a light bulb moment. I just saw that the business ultimately had lost a lot of power. So in her world, it was also trying to make a difference, but trying to make a difference in a great way. Robin Evans, founder and executive director of nonprofit Sow Much Good, SOW. Their efforts are to bring good produce and food desserts to just anyone across the world. She was inspired that her lifelong development was social and social responsibility were inextricably tied together. And unfortunately, we ran out of time. But so there's two other women on here that I definitely think that you should look into. It's on the bizwoman.com, founders that have made the leap from corporate climber to entrepreneur. Last but not least, before we go to a break, 11-year-old, and this is the one entrepreneur I did want to cover, 11-year-old budding entrepreneur Mira Mahdi. She is on a roll. She's been featured in Entrepreneur magazine. She is a sixth grader and began selling passwords that she generates by rolling dice to her friends and family for fun. Last month, she decided to take her business to the next level. The result is her company called, and write down, www.dicewarepasswords.com, her first e-commerce endeavor, and she's only 11. Her sales pitch is absolutely good, and not to share in full, particularly impressive considering her age. This is her pitch, quote, buying a password seems crazy, but trying to make your own password is even crazy. Come on, admit it, your passwords could be better. Instead of 12345 or password, your passwords could be longer, stronger, and more unique. That's where I come in. Using a proven methodology, I build long, strong, memorable passwords using string of words from the dictionary that I select using dice. The method has been endorsed by no less than an authority than XKCD Comic. Well, 2 weeks ago, Mahdi told Ars Technica that she'd sold around 30 passwords in all, counting online and in-person sales. 2 days after the piece was published, she was working her way through 500, and each password takes about 10 minutes to make. Listen to what she says now about her life. Quote, any plans on my weekends have now been canceled, she told the New York Daily News. My entire weekends go to this. During the weekdays, I really don't have much time since I have to do homework. Now, she does come from some really good stock. Her mother is Julia Angwin, a Pulitzer Prize-winning veteran investigative security reporter for ProPublica, formerly of the Wall Street Journal. Her mother is also the author of Dragnet Nation, Times Books 2014, a deep dive into computer and network silence. Well, this budding 11-year-old sixth grader also keeps busy doing dance and gymnastics. She creates each password by hand using the exceptionally secure Diceware system we just mentioned. Invented by Arnold Reinhold, the simple yet time-consuming technique is used to build passphrases and other virtually unhackable cryptographic variables. Isn't that impressive? So check her out. Mira Mahdi is her name, and her company, www.dicewarepasswords.com. Congratulations to all these women on Women's Entrepreneurs Day. Ladies, more to talk about when we get back, because if you still want to get in and you have a business and you think you need more money, you'd like a little bit more investment, or if you just need a nudge and you've got something that's starting up, when we come back, we'll talk about how you can win $100,000 from no less than Tori Burch. More when we return.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at InterParis Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does. Whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At InterParis Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. and she's the chief executive of Her Story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como. When we left, we talked about Women's Entrepreneur Day and highlighted a number of women. Check out our social media sites if you'd like to get more information. We do post the stories that we talk about on our Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus pages. You can find all our links on our website, www.ewnradionetwork.com/power-lunch. If you're coming to us via Blog Talk Radio, go to our BTR page, and all of our social media links are there as well. When we left, again, we did talk about how you could win $100,000. Well, yes, well-renowned self-made billionaire and entrepreneur Tory Burch has decided to give back. In honor of Women's Entrepreneur Day, Tory says, well, hey, listen, we need a I have a foundation, and one lucky woman and business will win $100,000. The Tory Burch Foundation announced its new fellowship program focused on helping existing businesses grow. Applications will be accepted through January 12th of 2016. 30 semifinalists will be vetted, and then public voting will be open to help choose 10 fellows. This is Show Promise. The 10 chosen businesses will each receive a $10,000 education grant, an assigned mentor, and 1 year of mentoring, networking, and business guidance from the Tory Burch Foundation, a 3-day trip to Tory Burch's New York City headquarters to participate in a pitch competition, and then the 10 fellows. One will be chosen to receive $100,000 in grant investment. So minimally, 10 women-led businesses will at least get access to a grant and mentoring from the Tory Burch. One of those 10 will get the major grant investment. The investment will be distributed as a $50,000 grant and a $50,000 recoverable grant to be paid back with zero interest within a timeline to be determined. To qualify, companies must be 5 years old or younger, must have annual revenues no more than $500,000 per year. Also, the company must be at least 51% female-owned. This isn't a competition for businesses that are still in the idea stage, says Tory Burch in talking to Fortune. You don't have to be the next Facebook, says Burch. Entries will be rewarded for scalability. Growth potential is a definite particular issue for women's businesses. According to a 2015 American Express report, women-owned businesses make up 30% of all enterprises and are growing fast in number and employment other than other sectors. In fact, it's the fastest growing. Although women-owned businesses employ 6% of U.S. workers. Burch says she hopes that her foundation will help create a community where female entrepreneurs can share their experiences and help one another with business challenges, including issues of scalability. Says Tory, quote, even if you're in a very different business, you're probably all facing the same types of challenges, she says. That's why she wants this group of women business owners to work together. Another thing that she is focused on, so something to consider to think if you stand a chance, she's big on social responsibility. It's a focus for her foundation, and 20% of the evaluation criteria. Tory was raised in a household that literally lived on philanthropy. Quote, when I came home, I was never quite sure who would be living with us because my parents took in so many people, she laughs. Tory hopes to encourage many companies to integrate their social responsibility from the start rather than waiting until they're well-established and successful. Burch says her company's social commitment, it has helped with employee recruitment and retention and also has appeal for customers. She's not focused on bottom line entirely. So, ladies, we do want you to see if you've got something, you think you've got it out there, definitely check it out. I encourage you, if you needed something to push you over the edge, take this as your literal, I'm literally trying to push you off your chair right now. Check it out at www.torybirchfoundation.org/fellows. And don't forget, applications are being taken until January 16th. So lucky you. You have less than a few months, but at least it's after the holiday season. Speaking of self-made billionaires, next on our list is Martha Stewart. She's no newcomer to the headlines. Martha Stewart made the news this past week with her American-made store when she decided to ditch eBay for the Amazon Marketplace. So the New York Times hosted the article, quote, a Martha Stewart store makes a leap to Amazon by Hiroko Tabuchi. Martha Stewart has ditched eBay, taking her American-made store to Amazon's handmade marketplace. As the e-commerce giant flexes its muscle in the burgeoning online market for handcrafted goods, Martha Stewart's American-made venture was introduced in 2013. It was intended to be on eBay's It was intended to be eBay's answer to Etsy, the pioneer in the online hand goods market. It offered locally made food, craft, and health, as well as beauty products, handpicked from Martha Stewart and her team at Martha Stewart Living, the media company she founded. But both eBay and Mrs. Stewart confirmed on Tuesday that both of them decided to part ways. Instead, American Made and Martha Stewart will go live on Amazon's Handmade store. They actually already did this past Wednesday. The arts and crafts marketplace the company set up last month. The new site has positioned Amazon as a formidable competitor to Etsy. Not that Amazon needs competition anyways. Etsy has logged almost $2 billion in gross merchandise sales in 2014, and it also went public this past year. Mrs. Stewart said in an interview that Amazon's mammoth scale overall made it an attractive partner for American Made, and she's smart on that part, which features handmade goods like knick socks, intricately designed coffee tables, and grass-based dairy. Sales at Amazon are said to exceed $100 million for the first time, making it one of the country's largest retailers. Ms. Stewart also said, quote, it's a bigger audience. I mean, that's the reason why we're doing it. It's the powerhouse retailer in the United States. It's a step in the right direction for our company, and I think to showcase the vast number of entrepreneurial small companies emerging in the U.S. Some of these companies might become the big giants of tomorrow. It is unfortunately an inopportunistic time for eBay. The company has fought a long, drawn-out proxy fight with its shareholders, forcing it to spin off PayPal, the global processing payments company, to an independent company 4 months ago. So if you're looking for Miss Martha Stewart's American Made store, go to Amazon's Marketplace. In other headlines, one of my favorite startups, and for transparency, I do hold membership with this company, is Rent the Runway. Unfortunately, not in the news and for not so much great headlines. Instead, the company and the co-founders, Jen Hyman and Jenny Fleiss, are in many news outlets for being reporting on the mass exodus of the executives. So we pulled one of the articles because there were so many written about them. And one of them is from Business Insiders, why executives are fleeing the $500 million startup Rent the Runway, from Maya Kossoff. In the last 2 months, Rent the Runway has lost four top executives. The New York startup, which rents formal dresses and accessories to users for affordable prices, recently lost Chief Technology Officer Camille Fournier and Chief Creative Officer Linda Honan, in addition to its head of partnerships and its president. More executives have also left in the past year, including the company's CFO, their head of people, HR, and their head of talent, as well as the CEO. So, in fact, their entire C-suite has left. This past Tuesday morning, Fortune's Daniel Roberts published a report after speaking with Rent the Runway's former employees. It's not a good one. Investors and CEO. The article concluded that Rent the Runway's problems with turnovers primarily stemmed from a hostile corporate culture. Rent the Runway was founded in 2009 by two Harvard Business School classmates, Jennifer Hyman and Jennifer Fleiss. Hyman is the company's CEO and Fleiss heads the company's business development efforts. The startup was valued at about $500 million by venture capitalists and has raised more than $110 million to date, because they take a lot of my money. Business Insider, this article, separately interviewed a few former employees and executives at Rent the Runway who had similar accounts of what it was happening at the startup and the reason for the exodus. And here's what they said. Quote, management team is not on the same page. Jen Hyman has a reputation for being cold. Another quote, a culture of fear in the office. One stated of Hyman, she creates an environment of fear because she wants you to be afraid of her and she wants you to know that she's in charge. She creates this toxic environment where people are on the edge every day. Another quote, you're constantly running in circles, never being able to get things done and having things go through a million processes and reviews, told a former employee. An excessive amount of turnover, which is obvious. One former employee who was at the company for about 2 years says that 100 people have left in that time. Some departments had a ripple effect. When CTO Camille Fournier left, for example, it created a rift because she was well-liked and respected. Another not-so-nice one is there's a Devil Wears Prada-like book that's supposedly about Rent the Runway that's going to be produced. It's called, quote, The Knockoff. It's a 2015 book co-written by Lucy Sykes, who worked for Rent the Runway as a fashion director and consultant from 2011 to 2012. Well, Fortune unearthed a Facebook group called Rent the Runaways, which consists of about 100 former Rent the Runway employees. A source told Fortune the group exists because everyone who leaves the company has post-traumatic stress disorder. Oh, that's just sad. Well, in regards to this, let's hope it's growing pains. I'm a fan of the company. I think the model itself has great potential. But with all companies, anyone with a toxic corporate culture will stunt any great invention or idea. So you know, hopefully Rent the Runway CEOs understand that people want to feel appreciated. And in every case, if not, it will, you know, a toxic culture will just kill innovation. So if you've not read the articles, I'm surprised they're pretty much in every business magazine. We wish Hyman and Fleiss luck. Again, great concept. Hopefully the Rent the Runaways Facebook page, I'm sorry, I just think that's funny. As startups always have this type of turnover, so it's to be expected, but let's just hope they can right the path. And while we're talking about people who are kind of used to this problem, we're going to move on to embattled CEO Marissa Mayer. And I say that with a pause because, my God, Marissa, I always say that. Embattled Yahoo CEO is under attack again, but this time it does seem the criticism has no end in sight. That's right, unfortunately for her. Now the CEO faces accusations similar to the CEOs of Rent the Runway. A lot of it that's been making the news is of her leadership style. And coincidentally, like Rent the Runway, many executives are also leaving in droves, as well as going public. Not really public, they're not giving their names, but they're giving anonymous interviews, as well as other former employees, describing Marissa's leadership style as cold and calling her a micromanager. So the article that we pulled, because there were so many to pull from, the one that we have is from Silicon Valley Business Journal. I think they did a pretty good job of summing up what's out there in the news. The headline, more questions about whether Marissa Mayer's days are numbered at Yahoo. This is from the staff at Silicon Valley Business Journal. Quote, another day, another story questioning the staying power of Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer. This time it's Miguel Helst at Forbes, who weighs in with a nearly 3,000-word piece headlined, quote, The Last Days of Marissa Mayer? Question. It contains a lot of rehash, but many new or little-known nuggets that paint a picture of a beleaguered company with plunging employee morale, dimming prospects of a turnaround. Here are some of the more interesting examples in Helst's report, but you really should read the full Forbes story. Helst starts out by describing an offsite meeting last month in San Francisco with about 120 Yahoo executives, in which the first day is uneventful. But on day two, with Mayer out of the room, things went downhill fast. When Brian Powers, Yahoo's head of HR, glossed over results from a recent employee survey that showed dramatic double-digit drops in metrics like morale and trust in the company's executive leadership, various vice presidents began venting to one another. Those murmurs of discontent then erupted into outright heckling, win another session, then billed as an opportunity to improve communication session turned into a lecture from Yahoo's top brass that many found patronizing. Vice presidents started calling out their superiors for not listening, not understanding, not being interested in changing. Some were cursing, lots of yelling. Helst also writes that many Yahoos were hopeful that Mayer's affinity for data-driven decision-making would help improve the product and the bottom line. However, Marissa Mayer is actually she's accused of being prone to snap judgment-making without regard to the impact. Another example, quote, early in her tenure, she demanded that a landing page on Yahoo Mail be removed simply because she didn't like the user experience. Executives pushed back, noting that the ad brought in nearly $70 million annually to no avail. Quote, she knows she didn't like it, but there was nothing about thinking about the impacts as a former executive. The story also details examples of micromanagement and other waste of time and money. Yahoo paid close to $3 million for the privilege to work with the Museum of Arts, Metropolitan Museum of Arts Costume Institute benefit, $2.5 million for the sponsorship and the rest for ancillary events. Besides the celebrity press photos and mentions of Mayer in her dress, Yahoo didn't have much to show for its money. Well, there's more in the Forbes report, including statistics on the decline of Yahoo's magazines and further examples of plunging morale, such as the unnamed former employee who said, quote, I am so frustrated and upset that so many people's hard work is just getting destroyed. So you can read the entire report. The link is on the Silicon Valley Business Journal, or you can go to Forbes, or you can just Google Marissa Mayer, and you'll see pretty much everything out there that they have to say about her. A note before we go to break about Marissa, she's done quite a bit. She's one of the most successful women in Silicon Valley, and I've always rooted for Marissa. But sometimes, and maybe this time, any executive has to make the decision if they are causing more harm than good when more articles in the past year have been written saying you're the problem rather than the solution. And had Marissa's revenue numbers impressed, at least she would have had that going for her. So not so much anymore, and maybe, just maybe it's time for a new change for Marissa and the company. All I can say is we wish her and Yahoo luck. On to a brighter note, I always like bringing other women executives in Moving and Shaking. We have two notable moves just to announce. We posted this on our website. Cole announced a new COO, Sonia Chawla. she's moving from big name firm Walgreens, and now she's going to head up the new company. There's a lot of excitement around Kohl's that she's going to be there, especially with her influence. They want to focus on fashion. I think they've done a very good job, but we'll definitely see some new changes now that Sonia Chawla is the new COO. And then the other big news is Nasdaq, Adina Friedman named the new president over at obviously at Nasdaq. This is big news. We don't have a lot of time to talk about it. We'll post the article itself. We'll probably talk a little bit about it next week, especially since it was just announced today. So there's a lot of great women in the news so far, right? We're almost done for the week, but when we return from a commercial break, we will end with our focus on women of Hollywood making news in a different way. More when we return.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at InterParis Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At InterParis Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
To the Power Lunch, I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como. We're almost done, and it's a big one fresh off the press. This article was printed online in the New York Times, and I literally mean fresh off the press. We haven't probably read this as well as we want to, but it's definitely something that I encourage you to get out there. Maureen Dodd is the author. She's a staff writer for the New York Times Magazine. She's also an op-ed columnist for The Times. She's written for GQ, Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, New York, The New Republic, Sports Illustrated, Time, and Harper's. She should get her credits. That's why I needed to read the whole thing. This is a version of this article will appear in print on the November 22nd print stands, and it will also be in the Sunday magazine with the headline, Wait for the Green Light. Well, the title of the article is called The Women of Hollywood Speak Out. And the subtitle is, Female Executives and Filmmakers Are Ready to Run Studios and Direct Blockbuster Pictures. What will it take to dismantle the pervasive sexism that keeps them from doing it? Now, one of the things that I think what was just interesting for me as well as us to see in here is, you know, you hear a lot about sexism across, oh, is it just because of the way they're portraying women in the industry? Is it just because, you know, women in skirts sell more than women who's a smart woman? This delved a lot deeper, and the article, I think, is a very powerful one. I also think that it's actually going to make some changes because it doesn't just talk about what we see about women in the industry and how they're portrayed. It actually delves deeper into how from everything from directors to writers to casting to the staff, whether it's on TV or in movie or even the executives, that the Hollywood in itself has a tremendously long way to go. I was particularly interested in a number of the quotes. They interviewed, I think it's at something like 63 men and women in the industry, because they also wanted to get a pretty balanced approach on what men think about it as well. And so a couple of things come out from this. Early on, what I can read from, what I sense from this is clearly it, for men in the industry, whether it's a director, getting, you know, movies, because it's highly dominated by male executives, that when you come with an idea or a story, it definitely is easier for the men to relate to a story like, you know, Marvel's, you pick a Marvel, right? A Marvel comic, whether it's Ant-Man or Transformers, which is not Marvel, but you pick any of those characters, what, they're blockbusters. And that's because men can relate to it. But this past year, or the last few years, what's definitely come to note is whether it's been the success of The Mockingbird or the success of the one with the vampires, I forget, or 50 Shades of Grey. It's very clear that there is not enough focus on the power, the purchasing power of women, and that movies that are thought to be geared towards women, which are either, you know, sad or love story movies, or even, what is it, the women, you know, the traveling pants, things of that nature, or Mamma Mia, right? Those don't get enough credence, as well, and I'm summarizing what the article says, it's still seen as an anomaly. And so it does interview quite a bit of folks in the industry talking about how deep and how bad it is. And some of the commentary on here, I think, you know, reminds me of the days when we were in, when I was growing up in the Wall Street industry. And in fairness, it was that way in financial services, and it has made tremendous leaps and bounds because of women like Sally Krawcheck, who's really been out there, where the ladies like Abigail Johnson. We have had so many women executives, Mary Erdos at J.P. Morgan. There's so many women executives that it has had a tremendous amount of impact to how the industry itself. I mean, we have had in industry working groups that were focused on women growing their businesses, like 85 Broad, which is a group that's now been converted to Elevate. So I think that it definitely does warrant what the article hopefully does, is it doesn't take away from it being a, quote unquote, a whining piece, more of an awareness. But the women in Hollywood, whether they are actresses, whether they're directors or writers or executives, the industry is going to suffer quite a bit until the next generation of women executives actually push just changes across the board. And the other thing that it does say is that there's some commentary about how there's a number of women executives that, you know, some of the people who are interviewed on here don't feel that they do enough. I had that in same impact when I was kind of growing up in the industry on financial services. Unfortunately, there were so many women that had fought just to get there that they weren't as helpful as you would have thought in terms of mentoring. This next generation of women leaders are all about mentoring and pulling women up. You know, the ones that have to fight through all of the sexism in the first round, they, you know, they're just trying to survive. So I think that they're going to witness the same type of effort of that in Hollywood. But clearly, the article, I really encourage you to read it, and especially hopefully it gets more, the New York Times article will get a lot more talk. It will hopefully spur some more dialogue, whether it's in the talk shows, spur some dialogue with other news commentaries. This is a piece that I firmly believe is as powerful as the Newsweek article that was written about women, that was published earlier this year about women and being entrepreneurs trying to get funding with venture capitalists and how sexist it is. It created a lot of changes in awareness, and hopefully this article, again, in the New York Times, the women of Hollywood speak out. So I do encourage you to get that in printed and at least read it. So, well, folks, I'm exhausted to think that I barely scratched the surface of all the women in the news. I know we ran close to the entire hour, but hey, it's just that great amount of news that we had to bring to you of women in the headlines. Next week is Thanksgiving, and I want to wish you and your families a very happy, healthy, and blessed Thanksgiving. We here at the Power Lunch are thankful for one thing, and that's for you, our listeners. We will see you next time on the Power Lunch Radio. Have a great week, and have a great Thanksgiving.
This is the EWN Radio Network.